The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
I'm Jacqueline Johnson.
And I'm Marina Middleton.
And this is Work Party,
a podcast that's part work
and part party.
Work Party celebrates a new generation of women who are redefining the meaning of work on their own terms and having fun while doing it.
In this podcast, we are diving into all the areas of being a working woman, mind, body, and business. No topic is off limit.
Real talk and hot takes. Think of us as your internet work wives. This is Work Party,
the podcast.
Wait, where's the champagne? Hi, everyone. It's Jacqueline here. And phew, it has been a roller coaster of a few months. And I am so excited to be back behind the mic recording a new episode of Work Party. I'm also really excited because I'm joined by someone, our new CEO, Marina Middleton, and my new co-host of Work Party. Welcome, Marina.
Hello. I am so, so excited.
Let's really do this. Little too much coffee. No, we're good. But let's be real. A lot has happened. A lot of change. This episode is going to be a doozy because this episode is all about me. Just kidding. But me selling Create and Cultivate in 2021 and the breaking news as of recently that I bought it back in 2024 alongside the one and only Marina. So first and foremost, who are you, Marina? Tell us everything.
Let's get into it. I'm a mom above it all. I have an 8-year-old son, Sebastian. You guys will hear a lot about him. I am now the CEO of Create and Cultivate, but I am Egyptian. I came here from Egypt with my parents, and I'm just so excited to have that, you know, be part of my really important narrative that I'm putting out there because I really don't see a lot of Middle Eastern women buying companies, running a CEOs,
sadly,
like podcasting, all the things. I just want to see more of us. And so I'm just really excited to be able to share more of my story and like really give permission to other women to share all the things, the good and the fixable, which is what you taught me to say, fixable instead of the bad, which I love that.
Yay. Okay. So mom, immigrant, how did you get this job?
what were
you doing before?
Sure. Yeah. So I went to school for marketing and fun fact, I actually originally went to school for criminal justice. I wanted to translate Arabic for the FBI. Did you know that?
No, but I now want to know everything about that. I'm like such a true crime fan.
Yeah. I did my internship at the maximum prison and I realized that that was not for me. And if you know me, like I'm very bubbly and I'm happy and I'm like, maybe I should find another job. And so, or career. And so I changed into marketing, graduated from Johnson & Wales University, went into sales. And once I had my son, I took a year off of work. And that's kind of my introduction to corporate. And I worked at Yahoo News and Tumblr, which for me, that was like my big dream was to work for a publication, like a publishing company. And it was really cool. Obviously, that was like really where I started working with Fortune 500 brands, really helping them with their messaging and branding and their digital media campaigns. And then fortunately enough, I was able to go out on my own in 2020. Like January 2020, I was like, perfect timing. Like, this is amazing. And
what prompted that though? Like, why go out on your own?
I got laid off.
Oh, yeah. My story. Yeah, I love that.
So Yahoo News cut budget and I was affected with a bunch of other people. And I had the option, a very privileged option, but like to go out on my own or to go back and work for another publishing company. And so I decided to take the leap and go out on my own, which is also coincidental. My first like dive into entrepreneurship, I was like, I'm going to be a lifestyle blogger. Like, that's what I wanted to do.
In 2020, that's rough. There were so many, that was such a competitive space that, you know.
Yeah, I did it for 1 month and I'm like, nope, this is not for me. I was like, I can't do it. Really is so competitive. And also people don't realize how much work goes into content creation and staying consistent. And so I took some time to really think about what are my expertise? Who do I want to help? How do I want to help them? And my biggest thing was that I wanted to help women. I knew that for sure. And I always thought like all of this crap in my life didn't happen just to happen. I felt like there had to be a bigger purpose and a bigger reason. And so I was like, what if I helped women build their confidence and take my expertise of branding and marketing and help them build their business? Specifically through personal branding, because I really don't think I would have gotten anywhere, especially where I am today, if it wasn't really honing in on like who I am, my personal brand, what I want people to know me for, and like how I showed up. And so that's what I did. I launched Empowered Confidence. I built that for 4 years prior to obviously Create and Cultivate. And I helped over 200 women. We have courses. I mean, it was so amazing ran retreats and masterminds and had my own podcast, like all of this stuff. And all of that led me to going to Create and Cultivate.
And being here today.
And being here today.
I love
today.
It. Yeah. Well, I will say one thing about you. You are so confident. Like even, and I think that's so impressive because I think it was maybe the first thing I knew about or like noticed about you. It was like you came in, you commanded a room in like a big way and you kind of, you know, you come into the room with a lot of confidence. So I think that's wonderful that you're going out to teach that because it's a hard skill to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you for saying that. It's so funny because I feel like you're so confident too. But us working together, what I realized was, and I think that this is a misconception, is that just because you're confident doesn't mean you know everything. And that's the difference. You're like, I know everything. No, but seriously, like, I feel like the differentiator is
totally.
Like, we might not know the answer, but we're going to do whatever it takes to figure it out. And that's okay. Like, I think a lot of the times people like stop going after their dreams or doing all the things because they're like, oh, I'm not ready. I don't know what to do. It's like, no, you figure it out along the way. And that's pretty much it. I figured it out along the way. And I feel like that's how you've done it
too. And that's not just for like small business owners or female entrepreneurs. That's like the CEO of every major corporation doesn't know what they're doing either. Everyone's figuring it out.
Exactly.
Like that's the reality. Once you start learning that along the way in your journey, it becomes a lot easier.
Yeah.
With so many beauty brands to choose from, how do you decide what to use? Personally, I think it's so important to seek integrity with any product that I'm putting on my hair or skin, which is why I love Moroccan Oil. They're famous for including argan oil in all their products. In fact, they kicked off the oil-infused beauty craze more than a decade ago. When they launched their hero product, Moroccan Oil Treatment, nobody was really using hair care oils at all. But Moroccan Oil believed passionately that argan oil could help make everyone's hair more beautiful and healthy looking with its nourishing antioxidant benefits. And they were right. Now lots of other brands have a hair care oil, but Moroccan Oil Treatment is number one. That's the power of integrity. It's made Moroccan Oil into a global lifestyle brand with a complete lineup of innovative hair products and incredible loyal customers in over 80 countries. And today they offer so much more than hair care. Their body care line has luxurious products for every step of your daily ritual with 6 heavenly scents inspired by the Mediterranean. They even have salon hair color, which is proven to reduce damage so you get gorgeous, long-lasting color while maintaining your hair's integrity. There's that word again, integrity. So experience it for yourself when you try Moroccan Oil.
Well, okay, enough about me. Obviously, we talked about, you know, how I got here. But I think one of the biggest things that we've been talking about, especially on social, is you buying back Create and Cultivate, which is like so exciting. And everyone wants to know how you bought it back. But I think, can we just scale it back to obviously you building CNC, but what prompted you wanting to sell it? Did you even know that this is one conversation I feel like even in our DMs we've been getting a lot is like, how do you know how to sell a company? How do you prepare your business to sell it? So can you just walk us through that story?
Totally. So I sold my first company. So I think some people know that. Some people might not know that. I had a marketing events and influencer agency that I built over 7 years and sold it to a strategic. So when you're selling a company, you can sell to a strategic, you can sell to private equity, you can sell to a ton of, there's a ton of different ways to exit a company, basically. Strategic is like when someone with a like-minded business is looking to grow their audience or build out their, you know, existing business in a different way. So for instance, the company that bought my company, my first agency was a New York-based agency that wanted to expand to the West Coast. So again, made sense for them to expand their business, have a West Coast office, have a West Coast pipeline of business, all those things. So sold that company. So that was, I would say, like, my introduction into selling businesses, due diligence, contracting, lawyers, things of that nature. Obviously, that was like a smaller deal. It was a smaller company, but I learned a ton along the way on like the questions to ask, how to negotiate, how you're creating valuations, what goes into diligence, how you should be building your company, all these different things. And I totally made a lot of mistakes in that company to go out and sell it because I truly never thought I didn't know that someone would want to buy my business ever. I was, you know, my little baby. Mm. Long story short, when I went in to start Create and Cultivate, I approached that business very differently because I had like a little taste of what it was like to sell a business. And I was like, let's do it again, right? Let's replicate that model because selling a business, there's a million different ways to make money, but selling a business is oftentimes the biggest way to make a windfall and really have that large cash transaction or equity transaction, depending, you know, on what you're kind of doing, or stock transaction. And so for me, I was like laser focused on that. And so the way I approached Create and Cultivate was a build to sell model. You know, my business partner in the company had also sold companies, you know, so we knew what we were kind of getting into. And we really, the aim for what we were doing was, we're going into a category where there's not a lot of competition at the time. And again, this is 2012, 2011, career-focused media for women did not exist. There was Marie Claire, there's Refinery 29, there's like, again, fashion, beauty, lifestyle with like a sprinkling of career, but like we were career first. So we were going into a white space. And so that's sellable, right? Two is we built a great audience. We're going to build a great audience. That's valuable. Three is we're going to be profitable. We're going to build profitably. We're going to build a really good model. And four is like, we're going to grow fast, right? And that is the model to sell in a lot of ways. And, you know, it changes all the time. And we did just that, right? And what ended up happening was a few different things. One is in 2018. So I would say the business really formalized and kind of became part of the cultural conversation in 2016. For the first few years, I was running it independently as a side project in my other company. I finally sold that company in 2016. And then that's when we were like, okay, let's double down and go big on CNC. We did that. That's when like really the buzz started happening, I would say. 2018. So if you think about it, like 2 years into like really being out in the world, we had acquisition offers. Mm. So we had acquisition offers from strategic media partners, you know, you would think of like traditional, like Condé Nast, Refinery 29, things like that.
And so they were coming to you.
They came to us. So, but basically what you do in that moment is you can go a few different ways. My recommendation is if you're doing seven figures plus, you probably want to bring, and you have something that's really hot and growing and busy, you can go get a banker. So you can go get a banker to come in, evaluate your business, streamline your financials, come in, create like, you know, again, models and revenue and all these things. You work on building a sales deck for selling the company. It's called a management presentation. And you roadshow your business. They go to all these people who are interested buyers. You pitch, they ask questions, and then you essentially are like, all right, the deadline date is, you know, June 1st or whatever. Everyone submit your LOI, which is a letter of intent to buy your business, which, fun fact, means nothing. Literally means nothing. It's like the most exciting thing. It's the most exciting and disappointing document you'll ever receive, because you're like, oh, they want to buy you for this much. And then like literally they can pull out at any time, and they often do. So basically in 2018, long story short, we went through the process. We were very small. So we were like seven people growing, you know, but, you know, again, new. Had a lot of offers that were amazing, and took one, went through the entire process. Long story short, but the deal fell apart in the nth hour, truly the nth hour, like the day we were supposed to sign. It was devastating. It was probably the second worst day of my life, the first being when my dog passed away. But I would say it was awful in so many ways, because one, selling your business takes you away from the business. I had no C-suite at the time. I was really the only, like, I had directors of marketing and directors of things, but like I was the only person. So I ran point on that entire process with my banker. They had gone so far as picked out our office space in this company. Like it was a done deal, and I'd given up my office space. So I was left, and I had told senior people because it was going to be announced, all these things, like just a few senior people.
Can you share why it fell through or no?
Yes. So, I mean, look, I'm sure there was a million reasons, but the main reason was, and to quote what they said, like, if you get hit by a bus tomorrow, there's no company. And it really opened my eyes to realizing I cannot be so integral to the business. I need to grow the team, and I need adults in the room and C-suite executives that go beyond me. Mm. It was a real expensive lesson to learn, but yeah, it was interesting. And it was something that I think there's a lot of like stress for buyers on that end too, right? Because there's something called a key man provision. Like I remember when you're doing a deal, a key man provision means like they really tie you into the business and they buy insurance on you, to the point I'm like, I remember my ex-husband being like, what are you, LeBron? Like, why are they taking blood at our, like, what's going on? I was like, listen, oh, I'm the God. LeBron of business, baby.
Wait, and real quick, do you know LeBron of business, baby, was so good. But you know what's crazy? And I feel like we learned this while we were trying to buy the company. Your deal fell through in 2018. You still had the lawyer bills that you had to pay to get to that point. That was like,
no,
what
and
F'd they me were up. I was like, we have to pay this no matter what.
And the lawyer bills on that deal, because it was done six figures on a small business that's self-funded, trust and believe. I had major beef with the buyer. It was like, I was like, you're a public company. It was a public company. Yeah. Long story short, and a lot of people on the other end of the deal were very disappointed as well with the way that they handled it. Even I've since had conversations with them that were like, it was a big mistake to not buy. I was like, big mistake for me, kill me. Anyway, it was fine. We survived. So it's December 20th, have to reinvigorate the team, find new office space, pay over $500,000 in lawyer's fees. I am a mess, to say the least, but I was like, I need to rally. I also had like a fire lit under me at that point though, too, where I was like, I was that close.
You're like, now I know what to do. Like, now I know what the red flag is or whatever. And I have to like build.
Yeah. I mean, after a lot of crying, like therapy, no, I was a mess. Okay. But I'll say, so week one of January, I found a new office space and I love that office space. Week one of January, 2019, I hired my COO, CFO, Neha Kumar, who I love. She changed my life. Like truly came in and was like, here's all the shit we're going to change. You know, like you can't be doing operations. You can't be doing, like, you're doing too much. You're doing too much. Do less. And we built up the team. And I was always scared, I think, to hire a lot of people because I was worried about the profitability without thinking if I hire more people, we'll make more money. Mm-hmm. And that's the risk we took. And it worked. 2019 was a gangbuster year for us. We absolutely crushed it. By the end of it, I had a GM who also changed my life, Samantha Ulay. And we were like a well-oiled machine. We had verticals. We had, you know, again, like policies, processes. Like, I was like, oh, this is what they were talking about. So we did it. Top of 2020. So again, I'm burning on both ends. I'm, you know, killing myself to run this company, you know, doing everything. End 2019, feeling so good. I'm like, 2020, we go sell. We get a new banker. Top of 2020, having conversations, you know, with a lot of strategics and things like that. And then, as we all know, COVID. And COVID was brutal, I think, for any type of small business owner. It was a challenge. No one had any idea how to navigate because it was the first of its kind. Mm. I think for me, I remember sitting, we had just come off our LA conference, February 24th, 2020, under the wire. Absolutely crushed it. We had done so well, blah, blah, blah. So I was on a high. We had South by 3 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things were coming out, right? Like there was a press conference from South by who's like, we're doing it. We're doing the event. Like we feel confident. And so I was like, amazing. We're full steam ahead. Let's go. We had 9,000 RSVPs, like seven figures in sponsorship, like a whole big event. And then the city of Austin called a conference. Mm. And I remember my GM being like, I don't think it's going to happen. And I was like, okay, so what's our plan? They pulled the plug on it. We all get into the boardroom. And essentially I was like, all right, we have to unravel this. And like our number one job is to keep as many sponsors as possible and move them to other events. Because at the time there was no conversation of like, that this is going to continue on, right? Mm. But I remember it so vividly. So we leave that thing, everyone's unpacking, you know, the event, trying to figure it out, scrambling, you know, nightmare. And I go into my COO and GMs, we go into the office and I just remember my GM being like, I think it's going to be a while till there's events. So I was like, wait, you think we're going to cancel Coachella? Like literally, because we had a Coachella event. God. We had venues for the year booked. And I was like, what do you mean? And they were like, it was like good cop, bad cop, but it was like, we needed both in the moment. Cause I was like, no, we got this. We're going to fix it. Cause like I had worked so hard to get to this point and we had such a good year ahead of us. And long story short, obviously all the deals fell through. We paused the whole process of selling the business, focused obviously on transitioning the business to digital. We moved really quickly. We were lucky that we did that. We were the first people to do a digital conference. May 2020, had 10,000 plus people from all over the world tune in. We were able to move sponsorship dollars from Austin to that, so maintaining that. And that year was so challenging.
But it's so interesting hearing from the business side. So again, December 19, 2019, I got laid off.
1920s in the Great Depression. Perfect.
And I went out on my own in January. I found Create and Cultivate through your digital platform. So like in May, that's when I was introduced to Create and Cultivate. But you guys were the first people to put out like resources for small business owners because it was such a dark, scary time.
It was a shit show.
Yeah.
And I was like, as we're figuring it out, post it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, let's bring in experts because PPP loans, but no one had any idea. It was just like a race to the bottom. Everyone just trying to grab as much cash as possible, which is sad, but like it's reality, right? Like we were trying to get money back. The vendors were trying to keep money. It was a really savage time because everyone was scared, which makes sense, right? And so, you know, we were lucky in that we had cash reserves. We were in a good spot, but like, you know, you're having these tough conversations of like, when everyone's laying everyone off or furloughing or, you know, scaling. And I was like, do we scale back? Like, what do we do? And we were lucky in that we were able to transition. Like our event designers were now building Zoom pages and digital conferences. Our event producers were producing content. Like everyone was all hands on deck and on the team, which was amazing. And so we did it and we got a lot of press around it, which was amazing. We also launched the first COVID-friendly pop-up in collaboration with Postmates, where you could show up and scan items or order on Postmates from small businesses. We were really innovative. I was like, okay, what are we going to do? What do we do in this situation, right? Mm-hmm. We're creative event producers. We create cool experiences. What do we do in a situation where no one can touch or see anyone? Mm-hmm. And we came up with really cool ideas and we got a ton of press around it, did really well, ended the year actually not horribly considering we were an event business. Around September, we got interest again in buying the company. And at that point, I was so beaten into the ground. Sure. I went to my COO, CFO, Neha, and I said, you have to run point on this entire process. Like, I cannot do it. I cannot be disappointed again. I cannot take my eye off the ball right now because things are so precarious, you know, in terms of like the market and what was happening. I mean, this is end of 2020. It was still crazy.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I'm not going to have what happened last time happen again, where, you know, I was too involved, you know, whatever. I have a big personality. I think people love me or hate me in some ways. And so I knew I was polarizing to the deal, being the face and all these things. Obviously, I was an integral part of the deal, but I also knew I needed to keep distance from that as well. And so long, long story short, you know, met with a lot of people. We ended up selling to private equity. So private equity, typically, their model is they find highly profitable companies that have opportunity to scale and grow. So they'll look at a company and say, wow, like Create and Cultivate, you did this bootstrapped, you built this, you grew this, you reached 1 million people, you're doing, you know, 8 figures in revenue, you're profitable. Like, imagine if we put some cash into this business and brought in some more of our resources, outside resources, to grow and build this thing into a huge thing, and then we sell it again for even more money.
It's interesting just you saying that about like they see the opportunity, but the opportunity came during a time where everything was digital.
Yes, and so that was their focus, right? It was, wow, you're reaching 10,000 people across the world. Imagine scaling a digital membership, right? We were at, I don't know, sub 10,000 subscriptions. They were like, imagine getting to 100,000 subscriptions, which when you think about it is like, yeah, that's a great business model. Digital is very inexpensive compared to the conferences. The problem is when you sell a company, there's so much catching and like there's so much like figuring it out and catching up and new leadership. It's challenging, right? Like it's a whole new thing. So I stepped down as CEO and I had told the PE company I wanted to step down because for a few different reasons. One was I was burnt to a crisp, truly. Yeah. I was brain dead. I was exhausted. I was, you know, I'd really kind of I felt like, you know, done what I needed to do. Two was like, I was the bottleneck for the business. And like, everyone would have admitted that, every employee, just like everything ran through me, everything flowed through me. I was involved in so much and like, you can't scale that. And three is like, I wanted someone fresh and smart and who had media and digital experience. Cause I really didn't. And so we brought that in, amazing CEO, team was huge, you know, and again, I took a big step back, but I felt like it was the right move for the company, right? Like I, you know, bringing on capital, obviously much needed post 2020, even though we were in a good place, it was like, you know, you need that to even run or grow or be, you know, scale even faster. And really smart, capable PE people, really smart, capable CEO, really amazing team. And I just took a step back and left.
So
essentially, I was still part of it, but left. And left the day-to-day.
Yeah. So you build this company. You spend years building it. You have gone through the ringer. You sell it. what do you do the next morning? Like, what the hell happens? What do you do with your time off? Like, what did life look like after?
So it's funny because I sold it in March 2021, but I stayed on for like eight months or something like that. So like the next, I thought I'd feel so different. Like the next day was just the same old shit. Like you literally get back into the same old shit. Nothing really changed, I would say, for those 8 months. Really. Like I think it was, I was really just teeing up for the new CEO to take over. The day I left, or like when I had stepped down as CEO, like my first day was bizarro land. Like I remember waking up and being like, these emails, I don't need to answer. They're not for me anymore. And no one's coming to me.
Was that hard or did you like that?
It was really hard. It was really hard. At the same time, I felt like a calm I had not felt in so long. I remember I don't know why this is such a vivid moment for me, but I remember going to the grocery store at like 11 a.m. and being like, this is so weird. Because I was glued to my computer from 6 a.m. truly till 9 p.m. for 10 plus years. I knew nothing else. And so it was a come down, I would say. It was a real come down. It was very nice in many ways. It was also very challenging. And I took a lot of time. I think it took me probably 4 months to unwind from it, to feel truly removed from it, which is weird. I would like creep on the Slack channel, like, what are you guys doing? What's everyone up to?
Yeah.
And I was like, they're fine. They're on their own. They're all doing it. You know, the show goes on, as they say. And so it was a very out of body experience. I was able to still do the podcast, which was great. But to show up to an event that you had no hand in any of it was a bizarre experience for me. Especially but also proud. Proud in many ways.
Well, I was going to say, especially because I don't think people realize that like how it works after you sell a company. I'm just like, you know, because you're the founder. You're the founder, you're the face, like no matter what. And so, I mean, I can only imagine like what that felt like going at 11 o'clock, just like, I have nothing else to do. So what did you do with your free time? Like, what did you end up doing throughout the year?
I moved up to Napa part-time, was like splitting time. That was great. Started gardening, I started cooking. I took classes to be a sommelier, you know, just cuddled my dog. I mean, I was retiree life a little bit for, I would say, 6 months. And then I got an itch and I was like, okay, I got to go back. And so I dabbled in a few things to kind of be like, what is my next move? And then had some personal stuff that was kind of going down. And then I kind of took a step back again and started coaching, like through Intro, the app that I use, and started doing that. And I love that. I love like meeting with small business owners, talking to small business owners anyways. And then I launched the fundraising masterclass. This is my favorite story. So I launched the fundraising masterclass because every coaching call I have is, how do I fundraise? How do I fundraise? How do I fundraise? So I built this thing because I was like, I'm just going to like automate this. So like anyone who asks me, I'm going to be like, go take the fundraising masterclass. So I launched this class on my own, separate of Create and Cultivate. Rita knows what I'm going to say, and she's like dying right now. I get a DM.
Wait, okay. I want to preface. I think it's very important to identify the things that you're an expert at. I feel very strongly that I am so, so good at selling high ticket items. I'm so good at launching and pre-launching and like marketing in terms of like speaking to one person and really selling it, right? And you're a genius. Like when you coach, people are leave and they're like, whoa, that was so good, right? So I knew
she's hyping me up because she slid into my DMs to be like, girl, no one's buying your fundraising masterclass. I know because I saw you reduce the price twice. And I said, who the hell is this girl?
It was a total flex because, I mean, I honestly, I had nothing else to lose. I was like, I'm just doing this.
This is something I'm talking about with the confidence, though.
Yeah, you just like, okay, so for me, I was driving one day on the highway and I had this epiphany. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I had this idea of, I don't know what made me think of you, but I was like, what if I started a mastermind with Jacqueline Johnson? And my vision was, I've invested in so many different masterminds in so many different like groups and courses, and everybody was maybe one or two steps ahead of me. And I wanted to learn from people that were 1,000 steps ahead of me, right? Mm. That have built, scaled, fundraised, exited, I mean, has gone through it. And whenever I think of that person and someone that has publicly the work ethic, I think of you. Like, truly.
Aww.
So I was like, okay, screw
it.
Like,
so let me slide into her DMs and not take her down a peg.
So I'm like, all right, she already knows how amazing she is. She doesn't know who the hell I am.
Truly. I almost was like, block.
Yeah. I was like, hey, want to know, like, have you ever thought about starting a mastermind? She's like, yeah.
No,
like,
no.
No, listen. I go, she said, yeah, what are your thoughts? So then I sent her voice memos and I go, well, listen, so I saw you launch the fundraising masterclass. It was at X amount at one point and you dropped it. I assume it's because you couldn't sell it. Here's what my expertise is. And then
I was like, my jaw was on the floor. And I was like, frankly, I was like, this bitch. But I stopped and said, she's not wrong. She's not wrong. And like, and it was funny because I responded to you and I said, well, I've never sold anything without creating, like,
yeah.
I've just like had that audience built in and I don't love, you know, but I was like, I thought, I don't know. Like,
but you also said you didn't have the capacity for marketing.
I never marketed again.
I did one post.
One post and you're like, oh, that's it.
But that's a lot that goes into it. It really is like totally. It's a lot of like pre-work. So it was no reflection of the program. It was more of like the actual marketing of it, which I knew. But yeah, that's what you ended up saying.
Yeah. But it was true. And I also was like, I wasn't motivated to do it, to be totally honest. I built it. It's really high quality. You can go take the fundraising masterclass.
Really?
No, it's really great. But I was just like, I don't, you know what? It's hard to go from a team of 30 people who are smart, awesome, marketing the, you know, shit out of your business, doing an amazing job. You've built the pipelines, you've done everything to like start it over. Like I was so like, I don't know. I'm just not feeling it. And I also feel like people have always told me like, oh, I can tell when you're in your flow or in your flow. And I thought it was such BS, to be honest. I was like being in your quote unquote flow, but it's so true. It and is. I was not in my flow. I was trying things. They weren't working. I was doing this, that, whatever. And the reality is the most I felt back to myself was when we started the Blueprint Mastermind.
Mm.
So tell everyone what the Blueprint Mastermind is.
Yeah. So like I said, I really wanted to find a mastermind that I could learn directly from experts, that it was a very vetted community and the women that were in it were on the same level in the sense of everybody's feeling the same problems. They're going through it and we're going to kind of like rise together. And so we created the Blueprint Mastermind. So during the conversation with Jacqueline, she was like, you know, Allie Webb is also really interested. And to me, I'm like, are you flipping kidding me? This is so awesome. Like, we're going to be able to help so many people. And we did. And so we launched the Blueprint. No, literally.
Did I'm you like, just I'm say obsessed. Flipping?
Flipping. I don't know. Can we curse on this?
Yes! I'm over here dropping. Anytime I talk to Marina on FaceTime, her son's like, she said a bad word.
Well, so that's the thing. Sebastian listens to the podcast and he'll tell his teachers that I have a podcast. And then they listen and I'm like, F this, F that. Cardi B raps on.
Look, you do you. If you want to, if you don't, listen. Okay,
it'll come out. It'll come out, guys. First episode. Give me a minute. But but so the Blueprint Mastermind is a 6-month mastermind. It brings amazing entrepreneurs that are already established. This is not like early stage. We really want to help them scale their business. We're talking about things like exiting and fundraising. We're talking about team building and confidence and mindset. I mean, all the things to take your business to the next level. There's group coaching calls. There's one-on-ones. I mean, it's really amazing. And we always kick it off with a 2-day in person. Our first one we did in Napa. Our next one we're doing in Nashville, which is really cool. That's going to be April 18th and 19th. And really the intention is to bring amazing women together, bring top tier entrepreneurs and experts to help them with whatever they need with their business. I love looking at you.
I love it. I was like, you're in sell mode. I love it.
But it's just so amazing.
It is so amazing. And so this is how Marina and I met basically was she had gone to Create and Cultivate, slid into my DMs, told me I wasn't good at what I was doing, LOL. And then we basically we're like, let's do this thing together.
Yeah.
Allie came on board. I felt back to life, like truly. Mm. Cut to October of last year.
We're in Napa for the Blueprint.
We're in Napa for the Blueprint. We're hosting this crazy thing. And I get phone calls basically about Create and Cultivate where, you know, the company was an interesting place. There was interest in selling it. And I don't know what came over me, but I was like, well, if we're going to sell it, I kind of want to throw my hat in the ring. And I don't even know, like I hung up the call. I'm like, what am I talking? I don't even know what I'm doing. But the reality of the situation was the timing was weirdly right in that the Blueprint was doing extremely well, you know, for a mastermind, which is something Create and Cultivate has never done. It was a brand I was like, I knew I mean, I loved, I had missed, I had, you know, kind of really felt such a passion for, which we'll talk about more in other episodes, but it was a brand I loved. It was my baby and it was hard to let it go. And like, so when I said that out loud, I had no idea what that meant. And I hung up the phone and, you know, and basically it was kind of like, what? Like, yeah, on the other end. But I was like, I don't really know, whatever. Like, I'm interested. Like, let's figure this out. I called Marina and said, this is insane. But like, if I do this, would you want to like do it together? And she said, let's ride. And so we spent the next 3 months in, you know, diligence. Again, it's the same thing. It's the same thing on the other side.
It was
right?
truly actually one of the most stressful 3 months of my life. Like, yes. And nobody talks about that. Like, and we don't have to talk about it in this episode, but like truly it was really emotionally draining. It was financially draining.
Totally.
It was like,
but I basically had to recuse myself from the entire process. So poor Marina, because I was on both ends, right? I was still on the board. I had equity. And I, and you, you know, weren't. So you had to come in and really command the deal, which thank you. Cause I know it was not easy. And I was just kind of, you know, we were all trying to make it all work. And, I mean, if you had said on my 2024 bingo card, I would be buying back Wrinkle Day. I would have said no way in hell, but, I'm so happy. It feels so right. Can you tell everyone the like our vision moving forward for the company?
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. Obviously, we talked a lot about this, obviously, during the process of what we wanted to see for the company. And one of the biggest things is obviously you being the founder and me coming from an attendee perspective. There was always something that not was missing, but there was so much content around launching your business and starting your business. And then it was like you started and you're like, well, what do I do now? Mm. And so our big vision and really what we have a very, very clear plan on doing is building a business that helps the entrepreneur or the woman, the ambitious woman, from launch to legacy, from ideation to exiting. Like, what does that look like? And really creating not just the macro events through our large, you know, conferences, which now we're going to do one large festival, which we've announced, which we're really excited about. But like, you know, the large festival, cool. But then what are the really impactful, intentional experiences that we're doing throughout the year? Really focusing on retreats and bringing founders together that are looking to take their business to the next level. They're, you know, really want these intentional conversations. We have a very clear vision that we want to be the largest networking platform for ambitious women and women in business. And so giving them the resources and the guidance and the community and all of that. So that's really our big vision. We're very intentional about the content that we're going to put out there. And Create and Cultivate has been so amazing with all of that. I think the missing piece for me as an attendee was the smaller events, right?
Yeah.
Like the smaller intentional like retreats and the mastermind and all
Blueprint
of that stuff.
Really sold me on that because I had said, you know, I'm so used to thousands of people, hundreds of people. Being in a room with 50 people, I got to know everyone's business inside and out, got to know them in such an intimate way. And they became friends, investors. I mean, in a way I had never experienced. But yeah, I think, you know, it's been a wild ride. I'm so appreciative to be here. I'm so excited to be working with you, Marina. And I want to give a big thank you to the community and our listeners for being so supportive over the years. Like, truly, I love you all. Like, the community, I've said since the beginning, has gotten me through some of the darkest days being an entrepreneur and the best days, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is what it is. I think we covered pretty much all of it, but that's it for this episode of Work Party. We hope you had fun.
Be sure to submit your listener questions via DM and we will get to them weekly.
So excited for the listener questions, and follow and subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review if you have a minute. And don't forget, work hard,
party on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Work Party. If you like what you heard, follow, leave a review, rate the pod, or slide into our DMs.
Check out the different ways you can create and cultivate on our website, createcultivate.com, from retreats and masterminds to our summits and festival.
We have different experiences to support you through your entrepreneurial journey from launch
to legacy.
Follow us at Create Cultivate on all platforms. And don't forget, work hard
and party on.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.